Thank you for the opportunity and to the organization for allowing us to talk on this topic that many of us have been working on in the past several years. And I very much want to thank two of the co-authors, partners in this, Doug Blanke and Harry Lando, who are in the audience and have been very helpful in developing the look at this. And also very much to Stephen Marks, who has helped mentor this program through, and perhaps we'll go into this more during the questions of how we can use this, the human rights-based approach and the lens of human rights as we look at what we can do with tobacco control internationally. Neither I nor my colleagues have any disclosures to relationships to disclose. So one of the things I will say, I have a little bit of a trepidation because I am not an attorney by background, and if I have a sense that most of the people in the room are attorneys, that it is a human rights is a legal language, and so some of you may know this language far more in depth than I do. But in learning about it, one of the things that quite struck me is that how it's so applicable. So the theme of this conference is for social justice, and I've been in so many sessions, including Betsy, the one that you were talking about, of how much if you use a human rights-based approach, it actually can help give you some traction for how to move forward on it, but I'm particularly interested in tobacco control. One of the things to look at is what is the magnitude of the problem, and probably we all are aware that tobacco is the leading cause of preventable deaths both in the U.S. and certainly in the world, and where we currently are is on that red trajectory, whereas right now between 4 and 5 million people die each year from tobacco globally, and if we don't do something about it, we're going to continue on that red line that by 2025, 2030, we're going to have 10 million people, twice as many people die every year from tobacco. What that blue line looks at is what happens if you do good tobacco control, cessation and prevention. You can significantly turn that curve down so you're having fewer people dying from tobacco. So the magnitude of the problem is huge. So if you're going to use a human rights-based approach, who are we talking to? So it's not just the attorneys, the lawyers that are like third down the list, which are critical because it oftentimes is the attorneys that are helping to formulate the policy and certainly the litigation, but also in how do you put it into the legal framework. But we must have advocates, the people that have relatives who have died from tobacco. So looking at those people who parents, they've lost their parents or loved ones from the heart attacks, from the lung cancer, the various cancers that are caused from tobacco use, having them involved in tobacco control. The public health practitioners, certainly everybody that's at this meeting, my entire staff in Arkansas, would be behind this as public health practitioners. And then specialized expertise, people like Dr. Landau, who have an expertise in addiction, but certainly also in environmental scientists. When we look at people who are looking at particle contamination of the air, very much we are looking at secondhand smoke. And then the others are this whole group of the UN agencies. And so the UN Agency for High Commission works with these different organizations, the Economic, Cultural, and Social Committee, which puts together like 42 different organizations to look at issues of which tobacco can have a resonance in that. In UNESCO, UNICEF, looking very much at kids, the Food and Agricultural Organization that is looking at tobacco obviously has to be grown. It's grown in over 100 countries in the world, much of it done under indentured servitude and with child labor. What is the Food and Agricultural Organization having to do with that, or with the International Labor Union? The Global Compact looks at how transnational corporations should be working. I can count on one hand the major transnational corporations. And for example, what I was just saying is Philip Morris actually, in the past year or two, bought the fourth largest Cretic company in Indonesia. So I'm wondering if they're not behind that lawsuit. The global brand is Marlboro. I know that that headquarters was in the United States, and now they've kind of shifted that off a little bit with Geneva. But you know, how are we going to hold the transnational corporations with their feet to the fire that for that lawsuit that you were just mentioning, that health actually can trump trade, and how can we work on that in public health? And then certainly the World Bank and the UN Development Program, and looking at how does tobacco and tobacco agriculture actually hold back the development of countries. So there's a whole group of people that we can be working with tobacco control. And then, of course, the enemy is the tobacco industry, where they are fighting us with all of their resources. They're incredibly wealthy, and actually they hire the best and the brightest, except for the ones that are in public health. So who has rights? So if you look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and if you heard Dr. Koh mention this on the first day, it has significant resonance, whereas the recognition of inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family in the foundation of freedom, justice, that's social justice, and peace in the world. Okay? And so one of the things is you're looking at human rights, and what I found to have so much resonance is that when you talk about human rights, you are saying that all humans are equally able to access the human rights. The human rights accrue to the individuals. They don't accrue to the society, per se. They accrue to the individual. And that all human rights are important. They're interrelated and interdependent. You can't have one without the other. All of your human rights should be fulfilled. And that they have no boundaries. And this is one that I think is particularly important because I look at the U.S. as not being actually a very human rights-friendly country. And we'll go through that in just a second. But when I think of some of the boundaries between, say, Malawi and Zimbabwe, or between the U.S. and Canada, and the presentation that you were talking about, what happens in Canada not so far away, those boundaries, they're artificial boundaries. Of course we know that. So human rights accrue to all of us equally, interdependent, and doesn't matter what country you're in. So how do we work on that? This was a concept in looking between agency and duty that I found incredibly powerful, and it helps even as I've been sitting in all the different presentations at this meeting of how do I look at this issue of claiming the human rights. So with human rights, the individual, right, who has the human rights, has to have the agency to claim those rights. And what does that mean? That means they have to be educated. They have to know that those rights are applicable to them as an individual. So they have to have the ability to claim their right, the agency to claim that right. And then who's going to provide that right to them? That is us. That's our society. So that's the people that we hang out with. And who do we give those responsibilities to provide those rights? And those usually is our governments, okay? So whether it's our governments, it's our tribal council, whatever our society has said are going to provide our rights to us, okay? So we need, as the individuals, we need to know that we can claim the right to a healthy environment. We have the right to claim no smoking in this room, okay? And who's going to provide that to us? Well, actually, in this instance, it's going to be the APHA in the city of Denver that's doing that this is a smoke-free city, okay? And the next thing is, when you look at what all those human rights are, and they're interrelated and interdependent, and you can't have one without the other, you go, oh my gosh, what utopia am I living in? Well, it's a progressive realization of those rights, okay? So it very much depends on what your infrastructure is and what your capacity to provide those rights are, okay? So basically what the human rights-based approach says is that you need to have progressive realization of those rights. You need to be taking concrete steps in order to provide those rights. You need to be measuring it. You need to be using different indicators to demonstrate that you are providing those rights. But it needs to just be a consistent march along to provide all of those rights, okay? So very much the capacity to development. Sometimes when I look at obstetric fistulas, okay, that occurs in many undeveloped countries because there are not access to people who can provide prenatal care. Well, how do you develop that capacity in order to provide the people who can do prenatal care? For me in particular, how do you, across the U.S., I was just at a session looking at the capacity for providing comprehensive tobacco control policies. So you can develop up your team to do that, but it requires resources in order to do that, and we all know those resources are being cut. So looking at that capacity development, it occurs whether it's in the U.S., a very wealthy country, or in some of the more developing economies where this is more of an issue. The next thing is that all human rights obligations, they have three basic obligations. There needs to be a respect for the human rights, to protect those human rights, and then to fulfill them. And some of those examples I think of, you know, in the U.S. in particular, we're very clear what some of our civil and political rights are. For example, our right to vote. It's one of those civil human rights. But did everybody across the U.S. have equal access to them? We can look at that and say perhaps prior to the civil rights era, perhaps those were not equally provided, that there was active opposition to certain Americans being able to vote. And we know that occurs in some of the countries, say in the Middle East, where we know in some of those areas where we are fighting to protect the right to everybody to vote. Okay, so that's in the protection of it. And the fulfillment of it is that we must adopt appropriate measures. We must adopt those comprehensive Clean Indoor Air Acts. Okay. There are numerous human rights documents, and there's no way I have time to go through that because, as you can tell, even though I speak quite rapidly, there are many of these human rights documents that we can draw the information from. But the one that I want to focus on is the one that's in yellow, the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, because it's within that where the right to health is delineated. The U.S. is not party to that covenant now. You all might be surprised because we're not party to many of them, but we are party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Both of those came out in 1966. The vast majority of the world has accrued to both of those covenants, but the U.S. is one of about five countries that have not done that for the International Covenant on Economic, Cultural, and Social Rights. But as I said, within that is Article 12, and that's where it says what the right to health is. That it recognizes the right of everyone to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health. A couple key points to that, attainable, again, looking at that progressive realization of the right. And then the standard of physical and mental health, and they said, yeah, but you also have to have the social and cultural opportunities also in order to attain the right to health. And so then what they did is they did a general comment. And so what a general comment does is take the different articles and expand what does that really mean. So I would urge all of you to go read both the International Covenant on Economic, Cultural, and Social Rights and Article 12, but particularly the general comment. Because I bet whatever aspect you are addressing in public health, you're going to find resonant language in there. For example, the one that I've pulled out in yellow, prevention and reduction of the population's exposure to harmful substances such as harmful chemicals or other detrimental environmental conditions that directly or indirectly impact on human health. Secondhand smoke, right? Speaks to it right there. The next one, so this is also in general comment 14, is looking at environmental industrial hygiene, so in the workplace, refers to the minimization so far as is reasonably practicable of the causes of health hazards inherent in the working environment. Again, this is a claim in order for all of us to be educated that we have the agency and the ability to claim the right to a healthy environment in our workplace. And it also goes on to discourage the abuse of alcohol and the use of tobacco, drugs, and other harmful substances. One of the few places where tobacco is actually explicitly mentioned in a place where I would like to see much more work on how can we actually develop our own general comment related to tobacco control. And then what do you do and what are those violations and how can you tell what is a violation in General Comment 14? Again, as you read through it, it says the failure to discourage production, marketing, and consumption of tobacco. How much clearer can that be? Okay? For the use of tobacco. So when you look at how do you use a human rights-based approach for tobacco control, you need to have a few steps that you need to go through, and the way I look at it is a three-legged stool. So we look at the magnitude of the problem. Remember that slide earlier on? 4 to 5 million people today, soon 10 million people if we don't act on this. Tobacco, the only legal product when used as intended, kills. 50% of people who use tobacco will die of a tobacco-related disease. Awesome statistics. And then the right to tobacco control derives from both the right to life and then the right to health. There's a special rapporteur that looks at the right to health. So this was established in 2002 in the Office of High Commission for Human Rights. And Paul Hunt had been looking at that and very much looking at infectious diseases. Anand Grover took this over about a year ago. He's very much interested in violence against women, but he had been at one of our Human Rights and Tobacco Control Network meetings. And so we know that we have him on board, but in order how to utilize him and use his voice, we're still working on. But there is somebody that can look at the right to health. I hope everybody in this room knows about the Framework Convention for Tobacco Control, the first public health treaty that was ever done by the WHO, and it was focused on tobacco control. But interestingly, it very much is built on the human rights tradition. So it uses much human rights-based language in it. And so I think it lays a very good groundwork for how to use that human rights lens within that. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, work together. Again, I quite like how that is resonant with human rights, that yes, it goes as the individual for who the rights accrue to the individual, but as a society, we need to work together in order to deliver those human rights. One of the ways that you can work on this is by doing a shadow report. So what a shadow report is that, you know, that International Covenant on Economic, Cultural, and Social Rights, there is a committee that countries have to report to, and they have to say what the governments are doing as far as the different health issues that are encompassed within that. Thank you. And so one of the things that you can do is that the government should be reporting on it, and they may or may not do that, and they may or not be honest and transparent, but you can put in a shadow report. So here, the O'Neill Institute at Georgetown worked with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids and an NGO, ACT in Brazil. where Brazil is a huge producer of tobacco. And so they created a shadow report to go in order to, you know, counteract. And so the committee can then look at both what the government says and what the shadow report says in order to help instruct the countries on what they could be doing for tobacco control. And so there's many ways that we can utilize the human rights-based approach, and hopefully maybe you'll have questions for how we could work together on that. Thank you very much.